You know what Jerry's last name is, don't you?
Mandering?
Just Mander.
Mander?
Jerry Mander.
You can reach him at jerry@trick.com.
That was my favorite Iron Man villain, Manderman.
The Mandolin.
It's just Jerry-rific. This is Dr. Tarr coming at you in 3D.
This is Professor. I saw it at the drive-in. Feather.
This is the midnight theremining gadfly.
And this is Dr. Head. And together, we bring you... Oh, fellow inmates, we are going back to the top 100 sci-fi movies of the 1950s.
Yay!
Yes, yes, yes. We are in the top half.
So we seem to be kind of mixed up on this chart.
The cream of the cream. Yeah, we'll see. But
the cream of the dream.
That's right.
The cream of the cream. Oh.
That sounds like my
More
early
socks.
Teenage, that was my early teenage years. It didn't take much. That wind blew sideways.
Sarah poster. What?
Heavier gym shorts. We are at Flick Chart, working our way through Flick Chart.
Flick it
good. number 50, we have from 1957, The Deadly Mantis, from Craig Stevens, William Hopper, Alex Talton. Yes. Big praying mantis terrorizes.
Bug movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey. Yeah, the tagline for this movie was pray for redemption.
Pray there's less stock footage, but there's not.
Yeah, really.
No,
footage in this one.
No, I like the scene where they see the imprints of the giant mantis like in the snow. Yeah. Like this bug wouldn't be flying around in the wintertime, it'd be dead, you know.
That's what I was saying. And I, you know, to be honest with you, when the Beast from, 10,000 Phantoms came out, the dinosaur in the snow, it's like, what the fuck is that? Mm-hmm. It's like, I thought he was supposed to be like suggesting he's cold-blooded and all that. And anyway, I had a problem with that. But that was, the monster's cool, don't get me wrong. Even in this one, the big bug is
a different movie, right? We're talking about
it. Yeah. Right. Okay. But
the
idea that those monsters were in the cold when they just don't fit in the cold,
They're just giants. So they could probably would explain it like, his irradiated body now.
Sure.
That's right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that would be the easy explanation.
Generates
radiation. That's fine.
Yeah. Your little kid's watching
that
anyway.
That was so the explanation to everything. Yeah.
Yeah. And it also looked different than them. We had bugs in the desert, so maybe it was its way
but
to
he
separate.
Was supposed to be he was just supposed to be a prehistoric bug, a mantis.
Yeah,
that's right, radiation.
That's right.
Or
that's right. No, that's true, but
yeah, it was an alternate take on that. Yeah, no, I like the movie, especially the scenes where he's attacking the building, the big building. That's it's really effective. I like the miniatures,
miniature work.
I mean, it's a giant bug movie. You kind of know what you're going to get, and
Clifford Stein, I think, did the effects. He did all these little monolith monsters and he did some good stuff. I for the low budget movies he did. Yeah, that was
So I had to go get the scorecards. I have not seen this one. So everybody else I take it has, correct?
Yes.
Correct.
All right.
It's just a big bug movie, basically.
Yeah, but it's fun.
Big bug.
Just to do
all right, number 49, we have The Creature Walks Among Us from 1956, the last of the Universal horror movies.
This is fun.
The last of the Creature trilogy, which we talked about at length on a previous episode. Right. This is my least favorite of the trilogy.
Yeah, that was episode 793.
793. I love that episode. Yeah, I think it's so far removed now away from the original story, and now it's more like trying to impose human will on this creature, like let's just make him one of us and not let him exist on its own. It just feels very cruel and needlessly so.
Kind of like a Island of Lost Souls thing.
Yeah, very, very similar to that.
It's forcing just,
it makes no sense cognitively. Like, why would we want to do this to him? Like, why not just let him go back to the Amazon and be happy?
In defense of that, I could say, why did Dr. Frankenstein make the Frankenstein monster? Come on. It's the same
thing. Because I can do it.
It's the same thing. I mean, because we talked about this before, and I think I was the only one that really, I liked this movie a lot. I didn't like number two very well. I liked number one pretty good. I liked that, when I was a kid and everything, I really liked it. But I really liked number three.
Two is just a rehash of stuff.
Yeah, I thought number three was more, it was examining that, what is the humanity of this creature? Because it kind of looks like a human in a way, because
mm-hmm. after he's burned away. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know. I really liked it. And I like that examination of going from a monster to a human
I like how they pointed out.
I hate the word monster because he really wasn't a monster. Right. This other creature to a human.
Yeah.
But they go into the scientific banner too, which I think is kind of fun.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, he has like this whole set of different lungs and skin underneath his scales and stuff.
Yeah, I liked all that really well.
Mm-hmm. All right.
We've all seen that one, right? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
We are on to number 48 from 1957. The monster that challenged the world. Yes. This is a fun movie. Kind of silly. It takes a while to get there, but I love the creature effect. Like that whole big, here's this giant version of this.
And they're pretty elaborate.
Yeah. It's a creepy scene. I felt bad for that. That woman's holding this like child, I think, or something, where there's a little kid in the scene and that creature comes through. I'm thinking, man, I bet that kid's scream, that's probably a scream of real terror.
Real terror.
This kid's gonna be fucked up for a long time, man. Having dreams about this big googly eyed creature trying to eat her. It's just a silly, silly movie. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I pretty much agree. I mean, it was okay. One of my favorites. Just didn't really.
The monsters are kind of interesting to look at for a few minutes. The idea that they're the first animatronic type monster, that kind of a, which they're not, but they're.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, and the little bladder effects. If you watch when they got the face, they had that little pneumatic thing where it's like, I thought that was great. And then they had the goop coming out of the mouth.
Yeah.
And it's like someone opened a can of green corn.
That was good.
No, it's good. Yeah, that's like drippy, slotty, snotty stuff, man. That was like the terror. Like you knew there's something.
Pre-alien. Yeah.
That's where it came from, I guess. Yeah.
And I will say it. I saw this at the drive-in.
Excellent. Oh, man, we should have kept a tally of that. How many of those?
Yeah, really.
That'd have been awesome.
I don't have enough
ink. He's in a league of his own, so just...
I don't have enough ink.
All right, moving up number 47 from 1958, we have Attack of the 50-Foot Woman.
Oh,
Alison Hayes. Yes. I think
I love this movie.
Yeah, go ahead.
I bet you did. I saw this at the drive-in. Yeah.
No, I saw this in the regular theater.
Oh, damn.
Socktown.
I saw it on TV.
I think I didn't see it at the theater. I think I saw it on TV too. Because I don't remember this one in the theater.
I thought this was just a stupid movie when I was little. I hated it. I appreciate it now, but when I first saw it, Yeah. When I was little, it's like, ah, oh, man.
I kind of like
the Colossal. Oh, did you?
Yeah. I kind of liked it. Yeah. I don't know why. Yeah. Big right boobs, maybe. I don't know.
Now they're of Colossal.
Colossal boobs. Hey.
That's right.
Giving Harry a hand job, you know. It's like.
Yeah, that hand looked awful rough and masculine.
Yeah.
I know. But, like, I like.
Someone has your right hands, Madge. She's not been soaking in it.
Yeah. Did they? Is this just me, or did they in the movie? I can't remember. Did they, like, they had the giant hand, right?
Yeah,
he reached in, did something. They had like hair on it, and then the next time when they used it for her hand, did they have like long, like the fingernails?
I think there was fingernails. Like, right? Yeah,
yeah. I just right. wanted to make sure I wasn't. Yeah. Just,
I think so. I think. No, so. I think
there which was is kind of funny if they did that, but it's,
yeah, they got like her. Yes, God, that's how we can.
We have to distinguish between the two.
No hairy knuckles.
Which. Which, you know, maybe that's
that would have been funny.
Yeah. Yeah, if they already did that movie, The Size of the Merkin.
Yeah. Oh, you know, speaking of this movie, though, I just saw somewhere that Tim Burton is doing a remake of this.
Really?
And, really?
Yes.
Is he gonna? Like, is who's?
I don't know. I don't know what he's gonna do. Yeah.
Is Lisa Marie gonna be the 50-foot woman?
No, he's not with her anymore. It's now Helena Bonham Carter.
Oh,
because he really wanted to be with Johnny Depp.
Yeah, because they do. Helena Bonham Carter and Johnny Depp look exactly alike. Oh. Next to each other, they can be. Oh.
Now we're getting into some good territory.
Okay, well,
moving on. Right.
Moving on. We're 1954. We have at number 46, 1984. Lots of numbers. 1984.
Is this with Edmund O'Brien?
No, this is Peter Cushing.
Peter,
that was a TV show, wasn't it?
I've never seen this. I don't know.
I think it was a British.
I don't think you've seen it either.
I'm not
TV episode. You know, kind of like the BBC. Okay.
Wow.
Have you seen it, Tar?
Nope.
No.
Okay, so nobody.
None of us have seen it.
Wow. No. I never even knew it existed. I'm like, oh.
But it's in the top.
But month. There is another one that.
There's a version that the 50s. One was,
yeah.
Yeah, and then there's a version that came out in the 80s that was really good.
Yeah, that's with, what's his name?
The guy from Alien.
Yeah. The guy from Alien. Yeah.
Right.
Who directed that?
The guy Tim from Burton. Alien? No, 84, I don't know.
Rudolph. Nothing had stripes on it. It couldn't have been.
So, yeah, it couldn't have been Burton.
Rudolph Cartier,
okay.
He makes movies and watches. So, all right, moving on. Number 45 from 1956. We have X the Unknown.
I've seen this one.
I like this movie. I really like this one.
I kind of liked it too.
It's like the scientific outweighs it, true sci-fi. You know, it was like they push that more than anything else. And it's that British dry.
Yeah.
Yeah,
plot. I'm trying to remember if I've seen it.
Creature that somehow pushes up from under. It's like some kind of primordial creature that lived like when the Earth was super hot, and it was like a mud. Anyway, every once in a while, earthquakes let it come up to the surface, and it tries to look for something to eat, which is like radiation. Oh, and this time, so
I had the movie in my collection at one time, but I don't think I've ever seen it. So
it's one of my favorite Hammer movies.
It looks so familiar, but well, I'll watch it again, and if I remember, I'll let you know. We'll change the scores.
Because right now you're catching up to me. I have 29 and you have 16.
All right.
Closing the gap.
All right. At number 44 from 1955, we had Godzilla Raids Again. Mm-hmm. Otherwise known as Gigantus the Fire Monster. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this one a little bit. We talked also, Dr. Tarr was on Heavy Metal Horror when we did the look at the Showa era of Godzilla films. Yeah. I like this movie. I really do. I like Godzilla Raids Again.
Yeah, I
do. It's lighter than the first one. We get introduced to Anguilus. It's a different Godzilla,
But what that's I the liked, only redeeming quality. There was another monster.
It was good. But I like seeing the family, the structure, in the like the rebuilding of themselves. Like this was a metaphor clearly for recovery, Japan and post-war recovery. Yeah, yeah. And so I liked that. And it was like a slice of life that you don't often get to see in Godzilla films. And
yeah, that's true.
So for me, anyway, as a fan of a Godzilla fan, I like it for. And it was also one that I didn't see until I was in my 20s because I didn't even know it existed. And so yeah. I guess that's maybe why it's a little special. Like, oh, this was like a bonus, you know, like a bonus movie, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah,
I thought it was okay. Okay. Yeah, so I don't remember exactly when I saw it. You know, it was later. It was, you know, not early on.
Yeah, we've all seen it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, number 43 from 1959, we have Return of the Fly.
Oh, yeah.
Vincent Price. Return of the Fly. What are you guys' thoughts?
It was fun.
It was okay.
Yeah.
I think the original Fly...
A big bug guy movie.
The original Fly was one of the creepiest moments I had had up to that time in my life when I'd seen it when I was a little kid. With him...
Press.
Help me.
Yeah.
That scene was so creepy to me. I'm pretty certain that spawned Cronenberg's whole career.
Yeah.
It could have been.
Yeah.
When he put his and the idea of him putting his head in the hydraulic press.
Yeah.
And at the end if you're watching, you see his little claw like twitching like a fly, just like when you
stuff. And speaking of Cronenberg, I mean, what did he do?
The Fly,
right? The fly.
Which is I'm not big on remakes, especially remakes of a movie I liked. I liked The Fly, but I got to give him credit. I thought
that was good.
I thought it was a really good, and that's pretty creepy.
Yeah,
it is, and I'll never watch it again. I mean, he has body horror that I can't deal with, you know, and there's stuff
that's his big thing.
Yeah, have you seen his trailer for this new movie what's that called? Shrouds,
yeah
where he's it's some like tech billionaire, but anyway, his wife who's he's like infatuated with dies, and he's like
I love his movies, I just can't.
Yeah, but you know, like he has that infatuation with this anyway, so he builds these sarcophagus things that you can put your loved ones in and like experience their whole decay, I guess. That's what it is. Yeah. You know, like you know like you could be right there with them and stuff like that. That's the idea of the story. I have no idea about the rest of it, how it works out, but
it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I know.
That's kind of harkens back. Do you know about the big fad in the early 19th century? I guess it was in early 19th century. More mid to late 19th century. I'm sorry. Of taking pictures with your deceased.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They would pose the deceased and you'd all,
that's so bizarre.
That's creepy.
That's so bizarre.
And it was a big fad. You know, it was a big thing.
It wasn't. And the guy who wrote, was it Alice in Wonderland? He did a lot of that.
He what?
He did a lot of those photos because he was a photographer.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know.
Wilde did? Really?
He did those, and he did these really kind of creepy photos with young children. If you go back and look at what is his name?
Lewis Carroll.
If you look at
which Lewis isn't Carroll, his real name, by the way.
It's not, but it's
it, of course it isn't.
His past is so weird and obscure, like you can't even tell, you know, like what, yeah.
That's interesting. The whole Alice in Wonderland is one of the most bizarre things you're going to read.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Like
it is.
You got to read the books. They're fucking amazing.
Yeah. And the movies are pretty cool, too.
Always creeped me out. The story always creeped me out.
Yeah.
The scene in Return of the Fly that haunted me, it's still to this day, it always still creeps me out a little bit, when the guy who gets brought in there with a guinea pig, and he's like half guinea pig. And
yes. Then,
I'm like, I saw that as a kid. I was probably like five or so, six. And I'm like, holy fuck.
Initially, when I first saw it, it was like, okay, that looks pretty goofy. You know, the little hands and feet. Uh-huh. But then when the guy steps on it, it suddenly changes that. Screamed or whatever it does,
right?
Like,
that was pretty sick.
I'm like, wow, yeah.
I think there's some of that stuff that gets into your kind of zeitgeist of your life, because the birds does that to me. Like, it's so phony looking, but the idea of the birds attacking and the eyes being pecked out, you know, and even the coffee cup, you know, or the teacup getting shattered, you're like, I don't like. What's his name that directed those?
Hitchcock.
I'm not a Hitchcock fan, but as I get older, I'm getting more and more. It's like how I feel about Bob Dylan. You know what I mean? Like, I've not liked them at a younger age, but I'm now appreciating things.
Appreciating.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, I think we will all appreciate the director of this next movie, number 42, from 1957, Not of This Earth.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
By Roger Corman.
When I was a kid, this movie kind of freaked me out. This had some the umbrella thing was just kind of freaky, and the weird men in
that
black.
That is so weird, though. That really is kind of weird. How's that thing flying? I don't get it.
Wasn't nearly as good as Tracy Lord's version, but, you know.
Yeah.
I love that movie. I really did. I still like it. I watch it, and it still kind of creeps me out. And just has a flavor and atmosphere to it that's very odd.
And this kind of I also see this as kind of like, this set the imagery for what everybody thinks Men in Black.
Men in Black. That's pretty much,
you know, being
true.
The alien, and it's exactly they go through all the tropes with it too, you know, the mind control, the you'll forget, and all that kind of stuff. But I think this is kind of like the image archetype that the people took for the whole Men in Black stories or whatever. But I love the whole idea that he takes off his eyes, and the whole. You know, when I was little at first, the whole matter transmitter thing.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, why is it just the head? I can never understand that. Why is it just the head? It's cheaper this way. I don't know. But anyway, but I did like the way they talked. I really liked, I don't know, it just set that tone for the movie. You know, talking about the pens dwindling. You know, and you already put the two and two together. It's other people or whatever in the pens of whatever they called them. Anyway, just.
Well, this is on my physical media grab. You know what I mean? Like, I want this on physical media. You know, I want a DVD.
Yeah,
right.
Because I think I'd like to. That's this a good, one good point. I'd like to have this on physical
from a
media
kid,
too.
Yeah.
Oh, and kind of going back to that. The opening, the title card sequence. Yes.
Yep.
And the music is probably one of the coolest ones of the Corman stuff. Yeah. That's just
really who like did the music.
I can't think of the guy's name, but the guy that did the artwork. And it was Clifford Stein music?
Cliff Music.
I thought it was him, but I'm not sure. But him and they did a lot together. I you know, that guy did, I wish I could think of the guy's name, that did the artwork for a lot of the title sequences for a lot of the Corman stuff, you know, all the way up to the Poe stuff and all that.
Yeah. I don't know his name.
Yeah, I was thinking it was Saul Bass, but that was...
No, that's some, yeah.
That's like from Rankin and Bass?
He did a lot of Hitchcock stuff.
Yeah, Hitchcock. That's what I was saying. We were just talking about Hitchcock. So he did, a lot of that.
All right. Well, we are going to be moving on to number 41, from 1957, Inishiro Honda's The Mysterians.
Yeah.
Starring Kenji Sahara. Yes. Yumi Shirakawa. I know, Dr. Tar, you and I are fans of The Mysterians.
Oh, yeah.
Professor yep. Feather, Midnight Gadfly. Yes. You absolutely. Like The Mysterians?
Yep, absolutely.
Late night movie.
What can I say? I saw it in the theater and just loved it. And just
did you like it?
It.
Okay.
Yeah.
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 I loved it. No, I really, that's one of my favorite.
And Japanese. It was in color.
It was in color. Yeah. No, I just liked the whole concept. I just thought it
was a fun space war movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pre Star Wars stuff. I mean, it was cool.
Yeah.
I mean, a giant robot. I mean, isn't that like literally the first time you saw a giant? Well, besides Kronos.
No.
I guess they're about the same year.
Yeah, Kronos. I think it was also 57. I'm not sure which one came out. But yeah, I mean, it's really early. It has that Japanese twist on it. Yeah, the costumes are gorgeous. The color.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And they were going, by this time they were doing like the super wide, you know, the 2-3-5 ratio. So they were really wanting to fill that.
And the giant, one of those giant airships that they drove around in with the look like the Flash Gordon thing, you know, with the spewing the black smoke out. Yeah,
that was interesting because when I saw it in the theater, we were blown away by the size,
sheer size of it.
I think the only other movie I could remember seeing in the theater that was the Moses movie with Charlton. Ten Commandments. One of the few movies I saw that actually had an intermission. Ten Commandments had an intermission. Mm-hmm. But The Mysterians, this is no kidding, because, you know, we were kids. I mean, we were running around and shit. All of us, there's probably five or six of us all went together. We all sat in a row. We never moved. We watched that movie from beginning to end, you know, then talked about it all the way home, you know.
Well, I think the other ones that were like that were Dr. Zhivago. I didn't think I would like that movie. And I watched it on DVD, I think, for the first time. And they actually, the DVD I had the intermission.
Did they?
Oh, nice. Like,
that's fucking awesome. You know,
that's a long, that's a really long movie.
Too. It's really long. Well, and Lawrence of Arabia was the other one.
Yeah.
So
I never saw those in the theater.
I didn't either.
I would have liked to have seen Lawrence of Arabia after I got older and saw it for the first time. I thought, oh, geez, man, this probably would just almost make you, you know, die and say that I've experienced everything now. I'm just ready to go. I think that's one of the most brilliant movies ever made.
Well, here's the thing. They used to have these reshowings of things in the theater probably about 30 years ago. And I went to Lawrence of Arabia and they showed it in the original aspect ratio, super 70 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And it was ridiculous. You know, it was just absurd. It was so good. And then the other one that I got to see was, Citizen Kane. They showed Citizen Kane.
Really? Got to see that.
You seeing that in the theater, you're like, well, and you're with a bunch of film nerds because not everybody's going to see Citizen Kane because it's
there. Sure.
You know, and you could hear just everybody go, oh. it was like this crowd orgasm that was going on, you know. But it was like that for Lawrence of Arabia, too. Like, they just would go crazy. And I was talking to my son, who went to see One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest for its 50th anniversary in the theater. And he had never seen it before. And he goes, I've never been with an audience that was that orgasmic. And I'm like, that's hilarious. He goes, yeah, because every scene that everybody knew, and he goes, and I didn't know any of it. And he goes, and it just made me go, oh, you know. And I'm like, that's the experience. That's why the theater experience will never be replaced.
You know? Exactly. That's what I was going to say, you know, the same thing that, you told me before about, going to see One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and I went, if I'd have known it was anywhere playing, I would have gone. If I had to walk, I would have gone. Yeah, it's one of my favorite movies. I would love to have seen. I've never seen it on a big screen.
Well, and, you know, my son's great because, you know, he came back after he was in, and we had probably a 2-hour conversation about the whole movie, you know, and I told him about the book, which I had read, you know, and I'm like, I'd read it for my class, getting a master's degree in English Lit, you know, you're like, you're amongst all these really smart people observing something, and you're, I don't know, man, there's nothing like being in a master's program, you know, with other people who love what the subject that you love, you know. But anyway, we've gotten way off track. Where are we?
That's good. We are at number 40 from 1959, The World, the Flesh, and the Devil, with Harry Belafonte, Inger Stevens, Mel Ferrer.
I've seen it, but to be honest, I don't really, you know, really.
It's like the end of the world thing, isn't it?
Yeah, post-apocalyptic.
Yeah, it is post-apocalyptic.
There are three people who are left.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually not a bad movie. I mean,
no,
it's nothing, you know, great about it.
Yeah, Harry
Belafonte was just kind of an odd choice, you know, but he was good.
Well, that's what they were pushing. Yeah, that's what they're, you know, that story. And they were dealing with also the idea of racial tension and all kinds of things like that.
And the
stress of like, okay, how are we going to live in this post, you know, this dead world out there, you know, all kinds of things.
Yeah.
But what
year did that come out?
59.
59.
Yeah. So
I did not see this in the theater.
And have to repopulate with white women.
Yeah.
That's what they were all. Oh my God. Yeah.
Well, number 39 from 1950, we have Destination Moon.
Wait a minute, go back. Who all saw the other movie?
What, Flesh and Devil? Yeah. I've never seen it.
Oh, okay. There we go. I wanted to hear that.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, I just...
You saying earlier that you...
Oh, okay.
I want that recorded.
Yeah, I'm sorry, because I... So it was just me and Tara.
Oh, that's just... I haven't seen it. Oh.
Hold on, Gap. I can't hear you.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either.
Oh, haven't you? Yeah, it's probably... I don't even... Shit, I wonder if it's even available anywhere. You know?
No, it might be.
I'm sure it is somewhere.
That'd be interesting.
I'm sure it's out there somewhere you could find.
I would kind of like to see it again, you know, as an adult, to, you know, just...
Oh, what's the other one? On the Beach? That's kind of like that?
Oh, yeah. Neville Shute. Book, yeah. Gregory Peck,
yeah.
I think Ava Gardner. That's got a that movie. When I saw it, depressed me more than any movie I've ever seen. It just depressed the fuck right out of me because I was young.
Yeah.
Right in the middle of the Cold War, you know. I mean, we could be bombed anytime.
It's all about marketing.
Yeah. And it was personal. It was all about the personal people. What they're all doing and how they're coping with it, this group of people. It's a brilliant movie. I would never watch it again because, you know, it just depressed me.
There's some movies like that.
But it was so good. That was because it was that good, you know.
So I would like to hear from each one of you, what is that movie that depresses you that much, that, you know, rejects you? I'll give mine right away. Oh,
yeah, what?
Requiem for a Dream.
For a Dream. Ooh. Very depressing movie. I really think On the Beach is probably my pick. I mean, that movie affected me more than, you know, most movies ever affect me.
Oh, okay. Threads. The British.
Oh, yeah.
Holy fuck.
Yep.
Yeah. That is not... Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a feel-good movie in any way.
I have a few that I have a hard time watching. I also lump them in with movies that are just hard to watch anyway because they're so good. Like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is one of those movies because it's just the ending, even though there's a moment of escape.
Yep.
It's just so fucking depressing. Like, oh, God, they got him. You know?
Yeah.
That and King Kong is that way for me as well. As much as I love the first half, the last act is so hurtful. Because this is, again, it's just my big squished, you know, heart. It's like, he's not a bad creature. He was removed. He's just too big for his environment. And it, you know, again, because you see that, especially, I think even in Love It or Hate It, the Peter Jackson movie does a really good job of conveying the human side of Kong. You see, that's the romantic isolation, the
he
human
slips and the monster. On ice.
Yeah. But it's just too hard for me to watch that end. So I
was a kid when I saw it, and I actually cried at the end of King Kong, you know, because it was just so depressing, you know. And I really had the same reaction with Frankenstein, the first Frankenstein.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I felt so bad for him, you know. I love the movie, but I how could anybody be this hurtful, you know?
Right.
But yeah. But for overall depressing, you know,
pity for the monster. Yeah, that lasted up until like Ghost of Frankenstein, I think. But that was just
kind of.
But that there again, that's the change in movies.
And then another pity for it when it was Abbott and Costello meet the Frankenstein. That's another pity for the monster in a different way.
He didn't choose shit.
I pay the fool that don't start him.
He couldn't do anything.
Abbott and Costello movie.
All right.
It's kind of like what's the Al Adamson Dracula versus Frankenstein? Where it's like, what's the point of this? Why are you bringing him back? When at the end he ends up ripping limb from limb? I would say, whatever. Okay, Zarkov, or whatever his name was.
Move on.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. Another movie from 1950 coming up here. Number 39, Destination Moon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen this one.
I liked this when I was little. I thought this was...
Oh, when I was young, I liked all the space. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know,
and in color.
Get older, you know, and you watch them, you go, okay. But, I mean, as a kid, you know, you didn't question a lot of this stuff.
Right.
Loved them all. I mean, even like, you know.
And it was kind of realistic. I mean, it tried to kinda be.
It tried. And there's that one where they were like trying to figure out how to get to the moon. It was all about the dangers of space exploration, or you know, there was that one that where there were a lot of prep. And I like that one too. I don't remember that one.
I'm trying to think of it.
It was all about the science of rocketry and things like that. And how would they really feasibly try to make this rocketry? This one's fun. The Destination Moon is fun.
Riders to the Stars or something where they're supposed to capture meteorites or whatever. It's something kind of weird. They're driving space planes and
okay.
But anyway,
have you seen this one, Gadfly?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, moving onward, number 38, we have the other version of 1984 with Edmund O'Brien.
Yes. Yeah.
I have
long time.
This was my first introduction to 1984. You know, I hadn't read the book or didn't know much about it, so I kind of liked it. It's kind of dark. You know, it's well done. I think it's very well done. I really like the version. And then later on, I read the book and went, "Holy fuck!" Talking about depressing.
Yes. Yes.
And the movie's depressing too. So,
if it's done well, it will be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was always an Edmund O'Brien fan for some reason. And I really like him for some reason. One of my favorite movies he starred in, DOA.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Didn't they poison him with, like, didn't he, like, glow in the dark?
I don't think so.
Was it phosphorus something?
Did he? I have to go back and look. I'm trying to think last time I saw DOA. I thought it was
something weird like that.
Years.
There's a couple movies.
I would like to go back and see that too.
At that time,
So
I thought it was that one.
Dr. Head, you haven't seen this one?
I have. Yes.
Yeah, okay. He said he did.
Yeah, okay. I have. Destination Moon? Yeah. Yes, I have. The 1984.
Yeah, 1984.
Oh, 1984. Oh, no,
I don't think I have. No, maybe bits and pieces, but no, I will. I have not seen it.
Okay. Yeah, me either.
Okay. Yeah. Did you see it, Tar? Have you seen the Edmund O'Brien version?
If I did, it was a long. I don't recall.
Don't recall.
No, I'll say no because if I did, it was a long time ago.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Well, I have seen number 37. From 1957 with Peter Cushing and Forrest Tucker, The Abominable Snowman.
Yeah, I like this one. This is another one. I Hammer movie I kind of like. It's like kind of pushing a little. It was different than the other Bigfoot movies or whatever you want to call them at the time.
Yetis.
That I saw. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yetis, yes. Yetis were the big thing. They were,
and their band, the Yeti, that bass player, Yeti Lee. Yeah, he was.
But good.
I really like the idea. At first I didn't like it when I was a little kid. It's like, oh man, they don't show shit. They don't show anything. Anyway, but now I appreciate the story now that, you know, you end up, yeah, they're there, but they're like these super beings or whatever they are.
Yeah,
you know, and just I like that a lot. And yeah. Who did the screenplay? He did like the Quatermass stuff.
Oh,
Nigel. He's the one that always Tufnel. Blended the.
Nigel.
Huh? I don't know.
Oh, what?
Good joke. Good reference, Dr. Head. Good reference.
Thank you.
Did he do Midwich Cuckoos too?
Yeah, I can't.
There could be. Yeah, they had a stable of writers who did most of the work, just like Terrence Fisher did most of the directing.
But anyway, his whole thing was like, meshing like supernatural and science together, which I thought at the time was kind of a weird. It drew me to
that. I liked it as I got older as well. I didn't like it as a kid because I'm like, I wanted to see what I was expecting.
Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Rampaging Yeti.
Yes. Same for me.
It breaks those conventions in a very unorthodox way. I'm like, but then I also see that more in a way reflected on the Bigfoot that shows up in the $6 million man, you know, 15 years later or 20 years later. It was very similar, that crossover. Yeah. Bigfoot and technology, you know? Yeah.
That was one of my funnest episodes of $6 million.
I like that one and the robot what was that thing? It was just that tank looking thing with like the one arm.
Come on
It was supposed to be like for Venus or whatever, so it's like this indestructible. I just remember him always like using his arm to
like arm wrestling it,
pretty much,
and to show him moving fast.
They slow it down.
That was brilliant. You know?
So you had a bunch of little kids in the neighborhood going running really slow.
I'm the $6 million man.
Look how fast I'm going.
Yeah, I love the $6 million man. I hated the doll, the action figure. It was bigger than everything else. It had cool features, but you're like, you can't play with this with anything else, you know?
Because it's huge.
Yeah,
I had one. I had the capsule, you know, I loved playing with that. But it was bigger than the G.I. Joes. And
How big were your G.I. Joes at the time?
They're 12-inch.
12-inch,
yeah. Yeah, they were big. But I preferred Big Jim. Do you remember the Big Jim doll? Where you could flex. And he had the karate chop arm. You could push
it. Oh, is that the one? I thought someone had a thing where you, like, press something in his hand, like...
Well, and then the karate chop, like, uh-oh.
Yeah, you press his back. Big Jim had a thing in his back. You press it, and his arm
would go down. And he did the chop. I thought there was, like, one that did a...
A grip chop?
A grip?
A grip.
That's most of my teenage years.
He had the grip, and you could also bend his arm to make his arm flex, and he had this little band that would go on it that would snap off because he flexed.
I remember, yeah.
That's fantastic. And
what I hated was that he was way shorter than Barbie.
But he was a powerhouse.
You just go to motorboating right there, you know?
Hey, I resemble that remark.
Just as soon as I said that, I'm like, oh, shit.
Right down to the broken band. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, break us some bands. All right. Well, number 36 is a movie I have not seen. I've never even heard of this movie. There we go. Nice. called The Deadly Invention.
Me either.
Oh.
Deadly Invention.
Lubor Tukos. Arnos Abradi, I have no idea.
That one!
Yeah.
No.
Adventure based on 19th century literature, a fantasy adventure. That's all I know.
It must be foreign.
Nobody knows this
one. It must be.
Yeah.
I've never seen it.
No, I've never heard of it.
No, never either.
Yeah, that's true. I never even heard of it.
I'm starting to suspect Flick Chart.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I mean, to put it on the top 50, but of course, they might be looking at a broader series of
global global view.
Global views, right.
Yeah,
well, number 35, true. I think at least I know at least three of us have seen this. From 1958, I Married a Monster from Outer
Space. Ah, yes, oh, one of my faves.
We've all seen it.
We've all seen it. Nice. Yep. Excellent.
And I like this one.
I did too.
Yeah.
It's great title. Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Great title. Who's the aliens stars? Are kind of cool.
Who starred in this?
Tom Tyron, Gloria
Tryon.
Tom Tryon.
Yeah.
Gloria Talbot and Peter Baldwin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was Alex.
Is that
dad.
The Baldwin brothers? Yeah. Yeah.
Baldwin brothers dead.
The yes. Baldwin brothers dead.
Oh, right.
I like them. I like the movie. I like
the aliens fun. Are fun. And they talk. It's like one of the first aliens. Well, at least I remember it as when I was looking at the aliens actually having, you know, some say into it. You know, they're not just there taking over. These guys have like, okay, this is why we're doing this. You know what I mean? A little more, they had a little more feeling. Yeah. And they had a little more emotion going into it, even though they said they were cold and unfeeling. But yeah. But Marge, sorry I killed your puppy, but
just an anecdotal note, Tom Tryon was also a novelist.
Yeah.
Oh.
The other starring
that I don't know.
The other.
Oh, Leverage guy. Played Archie Goodwin. Come on, Gadfly.
Yeah.
He was the son of another famous actor. Dang, I can't think of his name.
Timothy.
Huh?
Timothy.
Yeah, Timothy Hutton.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, okay.
He starred in The Other.
Okay.
Oh, that's right. He did, didn't he? Yeah. Oh, no, yeah. Let you say that.
Okay. So
it's all coming back now.
Moving on to number 34, from 1957, we have Enemy from Space, otherwise known as Quatermass 2.
Two.
Yes. Yes. We have the... I like the Quatermass movies. Yeah. I mean, I grew up watching the Quatermass in the Pit, or 5,000, or 55 Million Years of Earth, or what it was. But this, yeah, the Quatermass, the first two are really good. You see heavy sci-fi that you definitely see later showing up in things like the X-Files, you know?
Yeah.
And the themes that they use, you know, the creepy, the aliens from space and the mutations from space. And it's almost like Lovecraftian.
Slugs, the tar, the...
Yeah, kind of Lovecraftian in a way.
Yeah.
Especially in this one, yeah.
It's got Doctor Who in it too, you know. I would throw Doctor Who in there.
Oh yeah, that's true. The kind of the Doctor Who character. Yeah. I would like to commend you on your pronunciation, Doctor Head, because so many people say Quatermass.
Yes.
I sat going, what the hell, you stupid Americans.
Yes, Quatermass.
Quatermass.
Right.
He was nuclear powered.
Nuclear power.
Nuclear. Well, we're going on at 33. We've got.
I keep asking you.
Quidditch. From 1955, Kenneth Toby and Faith Domergue and Donald Curtis, and It Came from Beneath the Sea. Yes. Giant octopus.
Calamari Calamity, yeah.
Yes, the giant three-tentacled tritopus.
Tritopus.
No, he had six. Didn't he have six?
Did he have six?
I don't know. Something like that.
But he doesn't have the
whole. I only remember three of them.
That's what the gay man said. I tritopus.
I tritopus. Didn't like it. But,
Yeah, I really love this movie.
It's good.
Yeah, I love all of these movies with the Harryhausen animation is gorgeous. Even though they couldn't afford to do all the octopi. I just love the feel of the movie.
Yeah.
This kind of this building how you first encounter the octopus and not know what it is. It's just a classic, especially of this era. It's like it's a gem.
Yeah, yeah. Have you seen it, Gavfly?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, I figured you probably had. Yep.
All right. Monster movie. Yeah.
We're getting into some of the
some good stuff.
Actually,
good stuff. Yes. Number 32 from 1955, Revenge of the Creature. Starring John Agar, Laurie Nelson.
John Agar.
I did Shirley Temple.
This would be the sequel to
Every Time, Dark.
Creature from
every
the Black Lagoon.
I just thought I'd remind you.
I can count on it every time.
I'm writing that down for a title. I did Shirley Temple.
John Agar. Especially if we can do an Agar movie.
Have I told you?
This is an okay movie. It was okay.
It
just transfers the creature to a different habitat.
Exactly.
Like, how is he hanging out near the ocean? He's just freshwater creature. Shouldn't he be burning alive? All that salt, like, oh my God, I'm turning into beef jerky or fish jerky.
The only thing I thought was cool, because my parents took us to Florida one year, and we did go to that spring where they filmed Creature of the Black Lagoon.
Yeah.
And we went to Marineland at the time where they filmed that part. Probably the coolest part. That was pretty cool.
Silver Springs, I think it is. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Because they talked about they did Tarzan movies, and then they talked about how they filmed the Creature.
Did they have the bottom glass bottom boats there?
Yes, that's what we had. Yeah. That's what we took.
Cool. I never got a chance to go there. I would really like to. That sounds
it was pretty cool
place. Yeah.
But being at that age, I was like, and all of a sudden they say this. This is kind of cool.
I can relate.
Ass bottom boats. I like those.
Ass bottom boats. Yeah.
Yes.
All right, at number 31, another movie I think we've all seen from 1955, starring Jeff Morrow and Faith Domergue. She was just in everything. This Island Earth.
Yes.
I love this movie.
And who?
Me too.
Who's the other guy? Rex?
Rex Reason.
Rex Reason.
Rex Reason. Yeah.
One of the best names ever.
Good movie. I liked the movie. Great color. Great color. You know that?
Yeah.
Just had that vibrant color to
it. This would be pulp sci-fi, wouldn't it? This would just be all out there.
Pretty much.
You say pulp because Domergue is Tarantino. Used her in that Western he did.
Oh, yeah.
Hateful Eight?
Hard Eight.
Hateful Eight.
I mean,
She was in it?
She wasn't in it. She just used the name.
Oh, okay. Oh.
Domergue, yeah. And she was the one that, shit. Yeah, I don't know. I'm losing all kinds of names here.
Yeah.
She's kind of fun. We're if you kind of watch her career. She kind of went from doing this kind of fun stuff to
Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Really?
Jennifer Jason Leigh played Domergue.
Jennifer Leigh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Jennifer Jason
Leigh. I didn't know.
And did a great job. She was great in that movie.
And who
to share some of those movies with me, Dr. Tarr. The pretty bad stuff.
Oh, like, what was it? Like, is it like Doomsday Machine or?
Yeah. Did she do that?
Oh, I was thinking a whole different meaning.
Oh, no, no. Oh, sorry.
She didn't go to that. Yeah. No.
Like Faith Domergue gets her OnlyFans page. You know?
Okay. The next movie that's on the list.
And Francis the Talking Mule.
This next movie on the list, I'm going to call bullshit on this whole list.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes,
I agree with you, Midnight Gadfly. Yes. It's a travesty. It's a tragedy. From 1959 by Edward D. Wood Jr., starring Criswell. Bela Lugosi, Plan 9 from Outer Space at number 30. Ridiculous. Ridiculously low.
Top best.
Ridiculous. Criminally low.
It should be.
And it was definitely 10. On the worst, too.
It was.
Yes.
It was.
Now, how did they come about these movies?
I think it's member voting.
Just like what we're doing right now. It's member
voting?
I think it's
a popularity contest, maybe?
Yeah, I think it's member votes. I think they threw it out there. And I think there were 20 members.
Yeah. I mean, we all love
this one, you know, it's bad and all, but is it the worst movie? No. Is it the best movie? No, but
no. And I love it. I love it.
I do. I love it.
Me too. Oh, no, it is.
I will put it on while I'm working, right. You know, and I hear that music and I hear the dialogue. Yep. I will watch it and just have it on. Yeah.
It's either watching this or I have to watch Zombie Chicken Theater, but that's just
throw it on the floor.
Yeah. This is great. All right. Well, we're coming in. We're getting close to the last couple we're going to be doing for this episode. Number 29, one of my absolute favorites from 1958, Marshall Thompson. We have Fiend Without a Face.
I like this movie.
Yeah,
Oh, this was a creepy movie when I first saw it. And even before you saw the things. The sound was
awesome. That kind of sucking, pulsing sound.
Yep. And then when you saw it, the sounds actually matched.
Yes.
You're seeing that.
Yeah. And the blood, like when they were getting shot, whatever that black ichor, that blood was coming out, and that sound. When I was a kid, I'm like, holy.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, I know, right?
Like this movie and The Little Shop of Horrors traumatized me because that was the first time that I was old enough to know that I could see, like, oh, he's dripping blood from a fucking foot.
Oh, then he squeezes it, and there's like a big chainsaw.
I'm like, oh my God, that's the inside of a person. I'm like, this movie.
I laughed my ass off when I saw that scene.
Yeah, because I was like,
I was older.
Four years old, man.
I was older.
But Fiend Without a Face, that's just fantastic.
That's a good
And what was the scene where the one guy that had like part of his brain sucked out and he comes back in the tub?
That's right. Yeah, which we also that's awesome.
That creeped me out too. The other way,
did you see this one, Gadfly?
Yes.
Yeah. You like it?
I did. I loved it. That's what I said when it first came up. I'm like, oh, I love this movie.
Yeah.
And what was the reason that they're there? The guy developed a machine to amplify focus his thoughts into like a bean. Or whatever,
Yeah.
Or he had a mutant brain. He was like the, Professor X beforehand, but.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Oh, yeah.
Good movie.
Yes. Number 28, I think another one that I think we've all seen from 1958, starring Sean Smith and Duran, It, The Terror from Beyond Space.
Oh, yeah.
The inspiration for Alien. 20th Century Fox was sued. And this
almost won.
Well, they did. I thought they did one.
They did win.
They did one that.
Torgo Bednar.
By golly,
it was about the monster climbing through the ducts, and there was something else about that. They said, no, that's way too.
Well, since rocket ship had to have been huge.
It was,
It was especially in the '50s. You know, all the rocket ships. Pretty much all of them, you see the rock and then you see the inside and you go, Jesus Christ, that's a dimensional change here. Look how big everything is.
Yeah. And a lot looks like a living room. And they go walk in, there's a couch or something like that. You know,
and then office chairs.
And then the female astronauts are bringing coffee out.
Yeah.
The crates. They have crates. And then they're bringing like grenades and bazookas and shit.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah. I'm like, what are you doing with grenades on a pressurized ship, you fucking morons? Yeah. Yeah. That was fantastic. But no, I do love the movie.
Fun movie. Yeah.
Yes.
Fun.
Yeah. All right. Number 27 from 1955, starring Brian Donlevy, Jack Warner, Margie Adeen, The Creeping Unknown.
Nope.
Yes.
That's another one. I like that a lot.
I kind of liked it. Yeah, I liked it. Yeah.
It's kind of like the first, well, not first, but the body transformation horror type thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And you felt sorry for him because he had no control over it, but that's what.
Yeah. You didn't see this one, Gadfly?
No.
Okay.
I can see how this could have inspired the manga and anime Akira. In a way.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I never thought about that.
As far as like getting something, you can't control it. You know, those kids that, Akira, that, Kaneda, they don't want that. It just, they can't control it. So,
yeah.
But
that is true. Yeah. It is true.
Yeah. Have we ever,
end, the monster does look like a Lovecraftian type.
Oh, yeah. But yes.
That's sitting up there and it's just, kind of creepy.
I don't think we've not done an episode on The Cure, I don't think.
No.
We've talked about it many times.
Yeah,
but
yeah, it's really a fantastic
focused that, episode.
Is that streaming anywhere?
The Cure? I don't know. Probably not.
It'd be a good episode to talk about all of the anime movies that appeal to people that are not anime fans.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is my introduction to real anime. When I went watch this the first time, said, "Wait a minute, anime can actually be good."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of it. Yeah.
So anyway.
All right. Our last one today, kiddies. From 1956, we have Inoshiro Honda, Rodan, or Radon in Japan.
Radon!
Yes. Rodan is a kaiju film. Couple of pteranodons or pterodactyls or what they were of that type, whatever you want to call them.
Sure.
And I love Rodan because it's more than just the giant monster. Before you even get to Rodan, which is like not till like a third or deeper into the movie, you have this horror story about these miners, and something is killing off these miners, and that is so fucking creepy and really well done. It creates a mood and atmosphere. And then those big insects are crawling around. I mean, it's just really awesome.
That sound like squeaky toys, by the way. But
yes, they do. Should be easy to know they're coming close.
You say this came out in 56.
56, yeah.
I wonder when it came, when it was released in the United States, because sometimes they were like not.
I think in the States it was 57.
Was it 57? Because I remember seeing it in the theater, but I think I might have seen it in the one I mentioned before, called The Wiser, where they would have three movies, and this was later, later. And I think that's because I do remember seeing it in the theater. And then watching it however many times on TV, you know?
Yeah.
Because it was one of my favorite kaiju movies. I really liked it because I liked the whole beginning. I thought that was just really done well and creepy. And, and you know, even though, you know, Rodan always flew in circles, kind of.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Right. One wing was shorter than the other, so he couldn't help it.
But the miniatures, that's some of the best miniatures.
They call me Lefty.
Yeah.
Lefty Loopy. Gadfly, have you seen Rodan?
Oh yeah, yeah. I used to watch those. They would come on regularly, and I'd have a box that I would sit in that I drew all these controls on, like I was in some sort of
the jet.
Yep,
I remember that. Yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah,
so much fun.
Excellent. Well, there it is, fellow inmates. We are down to only the top 25 left for some other time down the road. Who knows what will be on that list?
According to Flick Charts.
I guess Flick Chart does know.
Quit flicking. You've been flicking at it, haven't you?
That's right. But, if you want to read ahead, you'll know more than we do.
And when he says Rita Head, that's just what
R-I-T-A.
It means.
R-I-T-A. Rita and her sister Judy Head.
Rita Head. I think I dated her one.
Well, I
was surprised.
Rita. I wonder what happened to Rita.
She's taking my taxes every fucking year.
Yeah, you guys want to watch me take a dump? Say!
That episode certainly took a dump on some of the best movies.
This is Rogue's Reason on the Theremin.
And you have been experiencing...
Yes. Unsane Radio is on Facebook, unsaneradio.com. Go there to look at the pictures and get a few chuckles. You can listen to every episode we've put out so far there. All 300 and by this time, I don't know.
20?
12?
12? 20, 13?
Something like it. 13?
Giga.
15? I don't know. Anyway, tarandfeather.com. You can go there. There's some interesting stuff there, especially the B-Team section is pretty cool. Tar and Feather Psycho Cinema is on YouTube. We have several movies up there right now, and more to come at some point. And then Unsane Radio Psycho, or geez, man, Tar and Feather Psycho Cinema is on Facebook too. Here we go. I'm done.
Unsaneradio.com, unsaneradio.com, and Heavy Metal Horror Podcast, which is on unsaneradio.com. Heavy Metal Horror Podcast is on the Facebooks and the YouTubes, and Montag Lewis is on the Instagrams. And We Freaks, WEEFREEKZ, a family-friendly webcomic on the Facebooks, written by our dear, loved friend, John Boyce, a.k.a. the Blue Fez.
Bong.
Wong.
And the Midnight Gadfly is missing. You have to look for him on the carton of an almond milk.
He's missing in his pants.
An almond milk.
He missed his pants.
Almond milk.
The gadfly hanging around David Cronenberg's house.
Because he's nuts. I mean, come on.
Ooh.
Exactly.
Leprechaun.
These nuts, yeah.
All right.
I'm going to say to Mrs. Feather tonight, hey, baby, look at my leprechaun.
We should do that for the Tar and Feather, too. We could be talking about taking care of the nuts. What nuts are you taking care of? These nuts!
Here's my shillelagh.
It's just a miniature replica.
Oh, wait till I show you the real thing.
No,
oh,
that's right. No, actual size.
Of a leprechaun.
Leprechaun, right, yes. Oh, I thought you meant mine. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, here's my pot of old. Here's my pot of old.
No, it's not a tumor. It's my genitalia.